Ezekiel, page 24. The cherubim in Ezekiel. We must now relate these things to Ezekiel's vision. It's been shown that the whirlwind, cloud, and fire relate to the judgments of God. The Almighty was coming down to judge his people. The four living creatures which Ezekiel saw represent the chariots upon which Yahweh was to ride forth and through which he would manifest himself in Israel. He was to visit the earth in this way for the purpose of keeping the way of the tree of life. At the time of Ezekiel, the way went through the nation of Israel, to whom God had earlier promised this cherubic protection. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way. But God also warned that this protection was predicated upon obedience. Disobedience would result in punishment at the hand of the protecting angel. Beware of him. Obey his voice, provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. These punishments were detailed by God through the prophet Moses in such well-known scriptures as Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. Israel repeatedly transgressed. In Ezekiel's day, they had filled up the cup of their iniquity. There could be no remedy. The punishments long foretold through the prophet Moses were about to be fulfilled. The early chapters of Ezekiel have many direct references to these prophecies. The sins of Israel threatened the continuity of the way of the tree of life. Abraham's seed was in danger of being lost through apostasy. The people were no longer entitled to the cherubic protection because they themselves had threatened the way. They were deserving of cherubic judgment by fire and sword. And the judgment, when it came, achieved the desired result. The whole process of the judgment of Israel at the hand of the king of Babylon and the 70 years captivity produced a remnant of faithful Israelites who returned to the land and refounded the true worship of Yahweh. It is true that they too became apostate, but this new beginning at the time of Zerubbabel ensured the continuity of the way until, in the fullness of time, God sent forth his Son, who is the way. We come now to consider the detailed description of that which Ezekiel saw emerge from the midst of the storm cloud. The first things he describes were the four living creatures, or the cherubim. He mentions in turn their feet, their hands, their wings, their faces, and he describes their general appearance and movement. Associated with the cherubim were large wheels, which were full of eyes and which touched the earth. And above the cherubim was the firmament. And above the firmament, the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. The whole apocalyptic vision appears to be a representation of Yahweh, who is enthroned in the great temple of heaven, bringing his rulership to bear by riding down to the earth in this great wheeled chariot. Thus, although Yahweh himself never left his throne in the heavens, his agents, those through whom God manifested himself, are represented as bringing God's rulership and authority, God's presence, near to Israel. And so Jeremiah, speaking of the havoc to be wrought in Israel by the Babylonian cherubic organized judgment storm, says, I beheld, and lo, the fruitful place was a wilderness, and all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of the Lord, and by his fierce anger. Again, the importance of the historical context must be kept in mind. Many of the details of the description of the cherubim are used in other scriptures with reference to Christ and the saints. We read, for example, of Yahweh's feet standing upon the Mount of Olives in Zechariah 14. We read of Christ as the Lion of the tribe of Judah in Revelation 5. As such, scriptures, however, do not indicate that the cherubim of Ezekiel chapter 1 represent Christ and the saints. They demonstrate rather that Christ and the saints will perform cherubic duties in relation to the human race in the future, as the angels have done in the past. They confirm the teaching of the apostle that unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come. The cherubim represent Yahweh coming to judge and to protect, and we see emphasized in the feet the judgment aspect of Yahweh's presence. Jeremiah speaks of the overthrow of the nations surrounding Israel at the time of the Babylonian invasion. The Lord shall give a shout as they that tread the grapes against all the inhabitants of the earth. But first warns the prophet, he shall mightily roar upon his habitation. Of this roaring, the prophet later lamented, the Lord hath trodden underfoot all my mighty men in the midst of me. He hath called an assembly against me to crush my young men. The Lord hath trodden the virgin, the daughter of Judah, as in a winepress. Yahweh promised Israel that if they were faithful to him, he would give them angelic protection. He would bring them into the land, and they would tread upon the high places of their enemies. However, they had been unfaithful, and so instead, behold, the Lord cometh forth out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. The Hebrew here for earth is eretz, which is the land, as in Micah 1 verse 3. Ezekiel sees a vision of this prophecy about to be fulfilled. Samaria had already fallen. The days of the high places of Judah were numbered. Feet like calves' feet, with the colour of burnished brass, remind us of Micah 4, where the daughter of Zion is told, arise and thresh, for I will make thine horn iron, I will make thy hoofs brass, and thou shalt beat in pieces many people. Here it is Israel, who at a time yet future will do the threshing, but in the vision of Ezekiel, Israel is about to be threshed. Malachi 4 speaks of a similar work of judgment to be performed by Christ and the saints. Another example of the future cherubic work to be performed by them when they shall tread down the wicked. The feet of the cherubim are said to be straight feet. The word straight is the word Hebrew yashar, which in Deuteronomy 12:25 is rendered right. Its connection here with the feet of the cherubim signifies that the judgments which God was to bring upon disobedient Israel, the treading with the feet, would be done in righteousness. The hand is that part of the body with which we perform our work. It is used in Scripture as symbolic of divine action, and in relation to our subject, this can be considered in two aspects. God's action in judging his enemies and God's action in protecting his faithful people. And Job indicates these two types of divine action when he says, shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? Evil of the kind Job refers to does come from God. As God himself declares, I make peace and create evil, I the Lord, to all these things. Israel in Ezekiel's day was about to experience evil at Yahweh's hand, and later we shall see how the prophet had to enact this before the captivity. He was told to smite with thine hand and stamp with thy foot and say, alas for all the evil abominations of the house of Israel, for they shall fall by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. And so will I stretch out my hand upon them and make the land desolate, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Jeremiah prophesied in similar vein to disobedient Israel, I will stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, saith the Lord. Thou hast forsaken me, saith the Lord, thou art gone backward, therefore I stretch out my hand against thee and destroy thee. But there is also the other side of God's character to be seen in the hands of the cherubim. There were some of Abraham's true children among the captives with Ezekiel and with Jeremiah in the land, who doubtless throughout this time of trouble upon Israel said, as did the psalmist, my times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. This is Psalm 31. At the end of the 70 years captivity, God brought about the promised restoration. Ezra came to assist in this work of restoration. It's recorded, Ezra went up from Babylon, and the king granted him all his requests according to the hand of the Lord, his God, upon him. Ezra's faith in the cherubic protection of the faithful children of God is written down for our encouragement. The hand of our God is upon all them for good that seek him. But his power and his wrath is against all them that forsake him. Ezra 8. The dominant idea behind the cherubic wings is that of protection. There are five different Hebrew words translated in the Authorized Version by the word wing, and this one in Ezekiel is the word kanaf, and signifies a wing as a covering or means protection. In Ezekiel 5:3, this word is rendered skirts, and the idea there is clearly that of protection. The protection and deliverance of Israel from Egypt was an important part of the cherubic work of keeping the way of the tree of life. Of this event it is written, as an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead him. Here it is the ability of Yahweh to deliver that is paramount. And the psalmist emphasizes the protection afforded his children by the one who delivers. And we shall consider three psalms where this is done very beautifully. In Psalm 57, the writer is experiencing a time of trouble, and so he cries, my soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire. Even the sons of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. But he knew all about the cherubic activities of his God, that God came down by manifestation on the angelo-cherubic chariot in order to deliver and protect those who walk in the way of the tree of life. So he says, he shall send from heaven and save me from the reproach of him that would swallow me up. Meanwhile, his prayer is made in which he confesses his faith in God's cherubic protection. Be merciful unto me, O God, be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpast. Psalm 17 is undoubtedly messianic. And in this psalm, Messiah prays that he might be protected from his enemies by having the cherubic wings stretched over him. Keep me as the apple of the eye. Hide me under the shadow of thy wings from the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies who compass me about. All these psalms will repay a detailed study, none more than Psalm 91. Again, the psalm is messianic, and Messiah is given the assurance that Yahweh's cherubic protection would be afforded him. Surely, he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. How was this cherubic protection to be given to Messiah? For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep. Same word as Genesis 3:24. To keep thee in all thy ways. The wings of Ezekiel 1 then speak of Yahweh's protection of those who trust in him, and to faithful men like Ezekiel and Jeremiah would represent God's guarantee to protect and deliver his faithful remnant. In verse 24, the prophet tells us that the noise of the wings was like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of an host. And this introduces us to the multitudinous aspect of the wing protection, the contemplation of the number of they that be with us can be of great comfort. The prophet Daniel, in his vision of the ancient days, declared, 1,000 thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. And with wonder we note the words of the apostle. Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? Faces. Here, more than anywhere else in a consideration of the cherubim in Ezekiel, we need to exercise care lest we jump to wrong conclusions. It is often argued thus. Israel was a four-square encampment. It is highly probable, direct scripture evidence is lacking, that the standards of the principal tribes corresponded with the cherubic faces. Judah, lion, Reuben, man, Ephraim, ox, Dan, eagle. It is therefore frequently maintained that the cherubim represent Israel, and in particular the Israel of God. However, on the basis of what has already been advanced, it is more likely that the four-square encampment with its cherubic standards was an expression of the fact that here was God's nation. He was their king. And the cherubic standards would represent his rulership over them. And they were a nation organized on heavenly principles. In considering the cherubic faces, we must again start with first principles and ask ourselves, what is the significance of face in the scriptures in relation to God? In Numbers 6, there is recorded the formula of the blessing to be pronounced on Israel by the priests. The Lord bless thee and keep, same word as Genesis 3:24, keep thee. The Lord make his face, plural faces, shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. The reference to Genesis shows that this blessing is actually a prayer for the continued cherubic protection of Israel. And this protection depended upon obedience. And in Deuteronomy 31, Yahweh spoke of the future disobedience of the nation and the way in which he would withdraw the protection. My anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face, actually it's plural, faces, from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them. As with most features of the cherubim, so with the faces, both the judging and the protecting aspects are brought out in Scripture for our learning. Jeremiah brings out both aspects. Yahweh is said to have hidden his protecting face from Israel and to have set his judging face against them. I have hid my face from this city, that is Jerusalem. I have set my face against this city for evil and not for good, saith the Lord. It shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. What is the significance of the various faces? Man, lion, ox, and eagle. If, as has been suggested, the cherubim are a representation of Yahweh's rulership, then it may be that we are to look for the significance of each of these animals from this point of view. Man certainly is the head of creation, and Yahweh's purpose is that all things should ultimately be placed under man's feet, as in Psalm 8. The lion is the king of wild beasts and a symbol of the divine ruler who came out of Judah, Revelation 5. The ox, renowned for his strength, the strongest of Israel's domesticated animals, and the eagle, the king of the air, are also rulers in their own right. Together they constitute a very appropriate symbol of the universal rulership of Yahweh over the earth. The cherubim move straight forward to execute the purpose of him with whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. The sins of Israel were such that there could be no turning back. Whither the Spirit was to go, they went. The word spirit is the Hebrew word ruach and takes us back to verse 4. I looked and behold a whirlwind came out of the north. The Hebrew word for whirlwind is usually the word seirah, but here it is ruach seirah. And so whither that ruach was to go, the wind, judgment of God, whither this was to go, the cherubim went, that is, to the land of Israel, to execute the judgments written. We have examined in some detail the way in which the scriptures present Yahweh in the work of keeping the way of the tree of life. He rides the cherubic chariot, coming to the earth to judge his enemies and to protect his faithful. Ezekiel, continuing his description of this apocalyptic symbol, now turns his attention to the wheels of the cherubic chariot. The RSV gives it verse 15, "Now as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel upon the earth beside the living creatures, one for each of the four of them." That there were four wheels is confirmed by chapter 10. The word rendered wheel is the Hebrew ophan, which is the usual word in scripture for a chariot wheel. In trying to visualize what Ezekiel saw in his vision, we must remember that we're dealing with the language of apocalypse, that is symbolic language. And the thing that Ezekiel saw does not necessarily have to be a mechanical possibility. The wheels represent something. The points to be noted are: there was a wheel in the middle of a wheel. They could move in any of the four directions. They moved thus without turning, that is, without changing direction, and they moved with the living creatures, which also are said to move without turning. The appearance of the wheels and their work was likened to the colour of a beryl, and commentators and translators are not able to agree as to the identity of this stone. It is the same stone mentioned in Daniel 10, where Daniel sees an apocalyptic vision of God in manifestation, and it is the same stone which was placed in the fourth row of the gems in the breastplate of judgment. The breastplate with its 12 stones, on which were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel, was four square, and it was a representation of the nation of Israel, which during its journey to the land was instructed to encamp in a four square arrangement. The names of the children of Israel were also written upon the two onyx stones, which were carried on the shoulders of the high priest. And we're told that the order of these names was according to their birth. In the case of the 12 stones of the breastplate, we read that the names were according to the 12 tribes. And since the breastplate was a four-square representation of the tribes, it seems reasonable to suppose that the order of the names on the stones corresponds to the list of the tribes as given in Numbers 2, where the four-square encampment of the nation is described. And if this is correct, then the beryl stone corresponds to the tribe of Dan. The word Dan means judge. Jacob in Genesis confirms this connection when he says, "Dan shall judge his people," Genesis 49. The beryl stone in the breastplate thus represents a judging power, and is therefore very fitting material for the wheels of the cherubic chariot, which, as we have seen, speak of the judgment of God coming upon Israel. The word beryl is a translation of the Hebrew word Tarshish, and both Jesenius and Brother Thomas derived the word from the root reshash, which denotes to break to pieces, to destroy. And the word occurs in Jeremiah 5, which is speaking of the judgments of God to be poured upon Israel by Babylon. "Your fortified cities in which you trust, they shall destroy," reshash, "with the sword," RSV. Thus, the wheels, being the color of beryl, emphasizes the fact that the idea of judgment is prominent in the wheels of the cherubic chariot, as we saw it to be in the living creatures which formed the body of the vehicle.